This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Business Bunker Show here on channelradio.co.uk in association with bizradio.co.uk. It's Tuesday, the 29th of December, 2020. And it's nearly over. It is nearly over. One of the most extraordinary years I can ever remember. Welcome to the end of the year Business Bunker Show. It's just me, Paul. I think Jules is lying reposed on a chaise longue somewhere, recovering from a bottle-fed Christmas. Although I did notice she had to toddle to the vets this morning, so probably having her mange checked. I hope you're okay. And I noticed on Twitter that she's having a bit of a rant this morning. So, we kind of miss that, but there you go. I'm going to be rounding up this tumultuous year in a as broader sense as possible, hopefully then looking forward to some of the things that are going to be better in 2021. And what I've done today is I've selected three interviews from the back catalogue that are amongst my favourite interviews. We've talked a lot on the show, Jules and I, about an interview we did a few years ago. I thought it was 2014, but Jules is quite right, it was 2013, where we interviewed Mr. Gerald Ratner, and Gerald came on the show to talk about an event he was going to attend in Kent shortly after being on our show, and we had a lovely conversation with Gerald, and we're going to play that for you shortly. And then I have two other interviews that I really enjoyed. One is an interview with Lisa Settle. Lisa went on an epic bike ride across Southeast Asia, specifically Vietnam, and we're going to be hearing from that, and we were joined in that interview by the famous Joe Dodds. And then I also had the absolute pleasure of interviewing John Surtees, CBE. John is the only man in history to win world championships on two and four wheels. He won the world 500cc motorcycle championship, and he also won the world Formula One championship. And when I spoke to John, when I caught up with John, he was obviously well retired, and he had taken over recently ownership of Buckmore Park, the go-kart track in Medway. And he talked about his racing career and his family trust, the Henry Surtees Trust. So we're going to hear all three of those interviews today, and they are all brilliant interviews, so do stay tuned for that. As always, I'd love to hear from you, the folks out there. I'm feeling very lonely all on my own here in the studio, so do give me a tweet. Drop me a tweet at VanillaWeb and use the hashtag BigBunker, and I will be able to find you. I want to say a massive thank you to today's show sponsor. The Business Bunker Show is pleased to partner with the Tenterton Chamber of Commerce, who are supporting local businesses. The Tenterton Card is an initiative to help their high street and all other local businesses by encouraging local shopping. You can find out more by going to their website, tentertonchamber.co.uk. Do check it out. Do have a look. Do visit Tenterton. It's a lovely town. And there's some lovely independent shops there, as well as a range of other businesses. For such a small town in the southeast of England, I'm surprised how many businesses are actually there. And there are lots and lots and lots of all kinds of creative businesses and food production businesses. And then, of course, Tenterton's famous for its wine, and the Chapel Down vineyard is in Tenterton. So lots of things to visit, and the steam railway as well. So a huge thank you to Tenterton Chamber for supporting the Business Bunker Show. As I say, I'd like to hear from you guys out there, so do tweet in. I've had a tweet from the lovely folks at Michael Park Surveyors, and they say, thank you very much, Paul. We would love a Business Bunker shout out today, wishing you, the team, and all your listeners a prosperous 2021. It can only get better, they say. Well, let's hope so. That's the lovely folks at Michael Park Surveyors, MPSL, on the Twitter. So where do we start with a roundup of this year? Back in January of 2020, the first thing that happened is we officially left the European Union, and everybody was looking and saying, right, well, we've left, now what's going to happen? We had to negotiate, if possible, a trade deal, and everybody was worried about that and still concerned over the whole Brexit question. However, at the time in January, everything else was looking quite rosy. We had the biggest number of people in employment that the country's ever had, 32.5 million people. Unemployment was down at an all-time low, an almost all-time low of 3.6%. Things were looking good. Business was trundling along. And then all of a sudden, February came along and there were rumbles of a problem of a health nature. By March, that had become obvious that there was a health problem, and by the end of March, we'd started to go into some temporary, allegedly, temporary lockdown measures, and unfortunately, that's where we've been fairly much for the rest of the year, in and out of lockdown, in and out of different tiers, lots of statistics being bandied about what's going on, most of them not very useful, especially, well, even the official statistics are not very useful because they don't really tell you what they're trying to tell you. So everybody's kind of confused over what is actually happening. There's been lots of contradictions from officials. Back in March, it was stated unequivocally that one shouldn't wear a mask. Now you get arrested if you don't. All kinds of different stories have come out. And I think the only thing that any of us can say about the situation is we're all confused, scared and worried. And we need to kind of get past this, hopefully. And we're all hoping that 2021 brings some relief and some better news on the health front and on the economy front. As we close this absolutely weird year of 2021, where we now have 7.9% unemployment, 9 million people not working but furloughed, so being paid by the taxpayer to not work, most of the rest of us working from home, we're in very different kind of waters now. But as I say, hopefully 2021 will start to resolve some of these issues and move us forward. We do have a vaccine. Although Jules was saying earlier on Twitter, and a number of other people joined in, that their aged parents and grandparents hadn't been getting the letters about their vaccine, which is insane in the 20th century, in the 21st century. My mum actually got a text for hers. So why some GPs thought that the second class mail at Christmas was a good way of delivering an urgent letter, I've no idea. And obviously a lot of people haven't had their vaccinations that should have had them, which is worrying. But we have vaccinated, I think at the last count, although it's another one of those things where the statistics get jumbled up, but I think we've vaccinated about 800,000 people now in the UK. So hopefully that will continue to roll out for those that want to be vaccinated or need to be vaccinated, and that will start to help ease the situation. So I do want to hear from you, though. I don't want to dwell on all the bad things that have happened this year, because you know we've all experienced them. We know what it's like. We all know that the economy is in meltdown, and especially the leisure and entertainment industry have been massively badly hit by this, and the fallout from this will continue for years now, unfortunately. So I think the big message for everybody is that we need to help get out of this. And the way we help get out of this is by shopping local, by supporting our local businesses, supporting our local shops, pubs, restaurants, food outlets and everything else, if we possibly can. Really trying to help each other to get through this and get out of this and make things better. I've had a tweet from the lovely Kim Stevens, Care in Kent. She says, I'd love a shout out on the Business Bunker Show for all the Kent, all the Care in Kent home workers in Ashford and Folkestone. A massive thank you to our Care in Kent teams for their outstanding care and devotion every single day. If you see us out and about, give us a wave. Happy New Year. And that's Kim Stevens of Care in Kent. Yeah, couldn't agree more, Kim. Fantastic. You know, so many people have put in such sterling work during these problems during the last year. And we mustn't overlook the fact that we all think that 2020 has been the worst year for a long, long time. But of course, good things have happened in 2020. You know, lots of people have had children and grandchildren born this year. You know, there's been some businesses have actually thrived thrived during the problem by responding. And even those that have struggled have actually, to use that famous term now, pivoted. I'm going to stop using pivoted and start to use pirouetted. I just think it sounds better. Anyway, lots of local companies have turned to online, have embraced digital, which is something that should have happened before, but they probably didn't do it. Now they've been kind of pushed that way and have embraced digital. And of course, lots and lots of businesses have embraced delivery and takeaway services. So, you know, there's been things that have happened during 2020 that have moved us on and have improved the situation for some businesses. In 2021, there is some good news coming along. I saw this morning that Openreach has announced that they're hiring 5,300 people as engineers to accelerate the rollout of broadband across the UK. So that's good news. 5,000 jobs is urgently needed. There are other organisations that are opening up. I happen to, just because I was involved in a discussion about this, I put in a request to the Financial Services Authority, and I found out that they've issued 1,400-ish new financial services licences for European companies wishing to set up offices in the United Kingdom. So again, that's going to create a lot of employment, at least 1,400 jobs if they only had one person in every office. So that's going to create a lot of employment in the financial services sector. So again, that's good news for 2021. So let's keep the good news coming in, hopefully. What else we got? The recovery well. I'm creating an extra treatment room for any holistic therapies to rent by the day and half day in Ramsgate Town Centre, as well as starting a podcast studio for recording podcasts, Zooms and courses to rent by the hour. If you'd like to find out more about it, contact Sandra, and you can email her at holisticsandra@therecoverywell.co.uk. So thank you for that, Sandra. If anybody wants to find out about that and what's going on, holisticsandra@therecoverywell.co.uk. But I'll tell you what, why don't we cut to the chase and listen again to the interview that Jules and I had with Mr. Gerald Ratner, jeweler and retailer. And this was at the end of 2013. So let's have a listen. It's an absolute pleasure now to welcome onto the show Mr. Gerald Ratner. Hello, Gerald.
Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show with us today. Really, one of the things we've been talking about just recently in the last couple of weeks, Gerald, is the whole retail scene. And as a man that's been heavily involved in retail, both offline and online over the years, I'd be interested to know your take on where you see things in the retail arena.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about the high street lately and the Mary Porter's trying to sort it out, but it's not really happening. And I think with the internet, which is about 12% of sales, which has come from nothing, and that is sure to go up.
Right.
Amazon will probably take over, become the new Marks and Spencers in 10 years' time. That's the way we'll look at it.
Right.
It's inevitable that the weakest part of this is going to suffer, and that is the high street. So I think even what Mary Porter's, or they're just really rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. I think it's got a it's got to contract, the high street, quite dramatically. I mean, I don't want to show my age, but when I started, it was only the high street. There was nothing else at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
When did you start, Gerald?
In the 60s.
Okay, the swinging 60s.
Yeah, so that's I'm 63 now, so
yeah,
I worked in the shop at 17, which I advise anybody to do, is to not miss that part of retailing.
Absolutely.
Get to the bottom, or in any trade for that matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Get close to the customer. I mean, most of our listeners will know you based on the original Ratner's chain of jewellers stores, but you've been doing an awful lot of things since then, haven't you? What, can you tell our listeners some of the things you've been involved in over the last few years?
Yeah, well, when I left the Ratner's, which was not just the Ratner's shops, we owned H. Samuel, Ernest Jones, we had 1,000 shops in America, watch fits and things like that. People always think about it as just a Ratner's chain, but it was a Ratner's group.
Yeah.
But obviously, after the unfortunate events at the Albert Hall, I had to resign and didn't really do anything for 7 years, more or less gave up, believed everything that was said about me in the press. And eventually, strangely enough, I got back into business through a health club, because I was doing a lot of cycling around, as you do when you haven't got a job, where you do sort of that, try and get fit. And then I made a success of that, strangely enough, even though I knew nothing about health business. And then I used that money to go back into the jewellery business, but I felt that it was 2003, the quickest way to expand would be online, and we were very lucky because the last 10 years has proved that the growth there has been much greater than it is in high street.
Absolutely. So it almost was a stroke of serendipity, that, to be honest, to some extent, and it moved you into an area. Do you think if that thing hadn't have happened, we won't refer to it,
that thing
at the IOD, that if that hadn't have happened,
the elephant in the room,
if that hadn't have happened, do you think you would have been much later into the online arena personally, or do you think that's just a side issue?
Well, you know, the event was obviously a complete and utter disaster. But I did then try and turn it into somewhat of a positive. And if you can turn that into a positive, you can turn anything to a positive.
Absolutely.
And the way I did it was basically I felt that if I went online with all those billions of websites out there, the fact that it was me with my notoriety, if you like, I would get more notice, more hits, more publicity than somebody who was unknown. So that's why I went on the internet. Yeah. So if I hadn't made that speech, I wouldn't have gone on the internet, because the thinking behind it was that I would get some benefit from the publicity, albeit it was terrible publicity.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Gerald's you've coined a whole phrase, you know, doing a Ratner. I love that.
Yeah. Yes, well, I'm glad you love it.
I do. I love doing a Ratner, yeah.
Well, you know, I do now. For years and years, it was sort of like a dagger being stabbed in my stomach, and I felt very, very unhappy about it. But I learned now that there's no point going around being bitter and miserable, and you've just got to laugh about it like everybody else, and that's what I do. And that's why I go around the country doing these speeches as well, and really laugh about it, be self-deprecating.
You know, I didn't particularly want to dwell on that as an issue here, but...
But I did.
But it is interesting. It's fascinating.
People always do.
Yeah, well, it's
always get back to that.
Yeah, and it's a real shame, because you've done so many things entrepreneurially, and so many successful things. But it is interesting. It does prove a little bit the truism that there's actually no such thing as bad publicity. You know, and I know you don't probably see it that way, but...
No, I don't.
but really, it has enabled you to do a lot of things and to build publicity on the back of that, and that, you know, that episode. Anyway, I mean, let's move on to the interesting and positive things that you're doing now. I was reading some of the interesting stuff on your personal website, and I think I read something there that you've been looking at the Indian market.
Yeah, I have just spent time in Mumbai launching Gerald Online there, which I don't advise anybody really to start up in India, because the bureaucracy and all the things that went wrong. But having said that, we did get there in the end, and we did launch it, and I lost about half a stone while I was out there,
because
I was getting so much aggravation. But in the end, we did.
I was going to say I had one of those curries ill.
It wasn't my best trip, I have to tell you that. I was feeling very homesick, but that's a bit pathetic.
How long were you out there, Gerald?
I was only out there for a week. Lost half a stone. We got there, we did launch Gerald Online in India, and it has been very successful, even though only about 2.5% of the population have credit cards, so we're doing cash on delivery. So when we started here on the internet, there was no one doing it here either, you know. There wasn't any Amazon or eBay or anybody, and everybody felt that, you know, it wasn't going to be big, but so that's what we try and don't follow the trend, don't do what everybody else does, and try and do something different.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. As it happens, I own a group of digital businesses as well in my day job, and one of my main businesses I started long before anybody had really thought about it, and there wasn't really a market for it online. But first mover advantage does get you a big stake in the game, and as long as you can see it through to, you know, to going mainstream, then it's a great business ploy if you can do it.
Yeah, and I think there's too many people that just look at everybody else and say, right, well, they're doing well, let's just copy them.
Absolutely.
It saturates the market, doesn't get them anywhere. You know, I think you have to be a bit more creative, a bit more innovative.
Absolutely.
And get there at the beginning of a new idea, come up with your own ideas, and then actually, you know, you can do very well. But just copying everybody else is what everybody does.
Yeah.
I just think it's just, you know, just like sheep, really. It's not really the way to go.
You see that on the high street, don't you, that where something successful opens up, like a nice cafe, and then suddenly there's like five copycats that open up. It drives me nuts.
Exactly. Everything gets, you know, ruined. It just gets, people just overdo things. I mean, you've got the Apprentice, which was a wonderful business program, and then everybody thought, oh, well, we'll try and emulate that. And, you know, every day I get phone calls saying, well, we're doing a new business program, this and that. And it just, you know, they just, or what was it before? People doing gardening or interior decorating. They just copy it. Everything just seems to, you know, be copied and copied.
And then they have the same background music and all that same sort of baloney, don't they?
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, I couldn't agree with you more.
And business is the same. Business is the same.
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many copycat businesses. And like you say, not only is it annoying because it floods the market, but it actually destabilizes the original business that innovated around it and, you know, moves it into a kind of tacky way. So I totally agree with you on that.
I mean, when we started, there were 9 jewelers. Now on the internet, now there's about 9,000. It makes my life difficult because I have to buy words on Google and they become very, very expensive because everybody's competing for that same word. But anyway,
absolutely.
You can spend your life complaining, but you just have to get on with it.
Sure. Anyway, you're due to come to Kent next week, we understand. And
yes, I am.
You're going to be speaking at the B2B event at the Ashford International Hotel. And yes. We're all looking forward to that. What are you going to be talking to your audience about there, Joel?
Well, inevitably, the speech, because I can't avoid it. If I stood up there for half an hour and not mention it, people would just not really be, would think that I'm just avoiding it. So I do talk about how, you know, everything got ruined,
right,
and how depressed I became, and had sort of sat and watched Countdown in bed. went through this 7 years of wilderness,
right,
of doing nothing, and how I got, but how I did then. Eventually, it was my wife who threatened to throw me out of the house, actually, if unless I got a job. so sometimes you do need somebody to give you a kick up the backside, and how I then got going again. How wonderful it was. Because I actually believed that I was completely finished, and how wonderful it was to build a business again from scratch, albeit nothing like the size of my old business. But
sure.
I don't want to get too cheesy, but you do start appreciating things second time around, and you know, especially if you've lost everything the first time. So, you know, that's what I talk about. That it's a bit gets a bit miserable, but it has a happy ending. But it basically the message is that, you know, you are going to get setbacks. Life is difficult, and if you accept that, it's no longer that difficult because you are going to get knocked back. And if I can come back from where I was, which was a pretty low place,
yeah,
then anybody can come back. And you know, we've had a very good run up until 2008, and a lot of people in business today don't know what it's like to really be under pressure. So,
absolutely.
But what I'm saying is, the message is that don't despair. That is part of business, and it'll probably do you a bit of good in the end. I know it's done me a bit of good.
Absolutely, and that's a very powerful and motivating message, and we're really looking forward to hearing it. We'll be at the event as well, because we're broadcasting live from there. So we'll look forward to meeting you there, Gerald. Before you go, give us a shout for your website so that people can come and have a look at what you're doing these days.
Well, thanks very much. It's just Gerald Online. If they just Google Gerald Online, that's a jewellery website selling diamond jewellery and
Brilliant.
Yeah, we could do with a business. That'd be great.
And we have a link to that on our website as well, so that if people want to find it, you just go to the Kent Business Radio website, and there's a link to Gerald's website on the front page of ours at the moment. Gerald, for the moment, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker. It was an absolute pleasure to talk to you. We look forward to meeting you and to hearing you next Tuesday at the B2B event at the Ashford International Hotel, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks very much indeed.
Look forward to meeting you.
Yeah.
Look forward to meeting you as well.
Enjoy your day, Gerald. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Will. Bye.
Flexible training solutions for the glass, glazing and wider construction industries. fitfortrade.co.uk for occupational compliance and peace of mind.
Grow your business with Kent's Best Business Events. Visit bestbusinessevents.co.uk.
Jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
Lock Associates Group. Let us look after all your people needs so you can focus on growing your business. No long-term tie-ins, just responsive, commercially minded support. Find us at lochassociates.co.uk.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back. That was an interview we did some years ago with the fabulous Mr. Gerald Ratner. Some life lessons there in how to overcome the adversity of losing a £1 billion business. An absolutely unbelievable story, really, for those that remember back then about what happened. A throwaway line at a business event caused the destruction of a whole group, as Gerald said, of retailers, and sent Gerald into a few years of despair and depression until he finally pulled himself out of it. And all power to him for doing that. And I happen to know that he's still doing incredibly well, especially in the Asian market, and has gone back to retailing in physical premises to a large. He does have the online still, but in Asia he still has chains of shops. So all power to him, and what a great interview that was. So it was a pleasure to play it again, and I'm glad I found it after all this time. Do keep your tweets coming in. I want to say a huge thank you to ongoing show sponsors. The Business Bunk Show is very pleased to partner with leading employment law firm Lock Associates. They'll be bringing us regular news, information and help with employment law, health and well-being all the way through 2021. If you want to find out more about Lock Associates Group, go to their website, which is www.lockassociates.co.uk. That's Lock, spelled L-O-C-H. And a huge thank you to them for supporting us. While we're talking about having support, earlier on in 2020, we were supported by the lovely folks at Colin Bat Removals, and they've tweeted to say, have a great show. Please, we could be a small part of this year. No, you're a big part of this year. Please give us a shout out and wish all of your listeners a happy new year and best wishes for a killer 2021. I'm not sure if that's a good term or not. Let us know if we can help in any way with removal, storage and our customer service. At Colin Bat Removals, based here in Ashford, a nationwide removals and storage service and winners of many awards, especially customer service awards. And for me, customer service awards are the pinnacle of awards, because they're awarded by people that have actually paid to use your service and have appreciated it. So a huge thank you to Colin Bat Removals. Thank you for your support, and we wish you a happy new year as well. Tracy Ferguson said, have a great last Business Bunker Show of the Year, and thank you for continuing to support, inform and encourage our small business community. And again, once again, thank you, Tracy. You are a fantastic supporter of us and this radio show, and we really do appreciate it. Tracy Ann Barker, Tabber Official on the Twitter, yoo-hoo, she says, it's Business Bunker Day. I'd love a shout out, please, Paul. Thank you. It's happy in-between holiday. Yeah, I hope you're well. And I have my head down preparing for one of my next bespoke management courses, but we'll be listening live today. So thank you, Tracy Ann. You can follow her on the Twitter, Tabba, T-A-B-A underscore official. Do give her a follow. Now, my timeline is now clogged up with Jules moaning about the Royal Mail. Sorry about that. I'll catch up with some more tweets later, but do keep the tweets coming. Send your gifts, say hello, ask for a shout out, any of those things. If you're struggling still as a business, then there's a blog that we have now about all the new grants and furlough schemes that have been announced, and the furlough schemes have now been extended until April. And what we've done is we've put a website link for every borough in Kent and Medway in one place, so that wherever you're based, you can go and find your local support issues and how you claim for all the things that are claimable. And to find that, if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/RS-grants, that's RS-grants, there's a blog there with links to every borough in Kent and Medway, which tells you how to find out what grants are available and tells you about the furlough scheme and how to claim for support and money. What else have we got? There's a special scheme, whilst we're talking about that, in Gravesham. If you have a business based in Gravesham and it's fallen through the cracks of financial support, Gravesham Council have a discretionary grant scheme, which is providing £500 grants. The scheme closes on the 8th of January, so do check it out now. You can find out all about it by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/Gravesham. So do check that out. Right. I've got some good news stuff coming up. I'm going to do that a bit later on in the show. What I want to do now is play another interview for you, but I'm going to play a record first. And I'm going to play this record because Lisa, who the interview is with, requested this the first time that she was on. And she's also said, can I have a shout out for my lovely partners in crime, Sally and Liz? She said, we've had quite a few adventures together, including the NAM to CAM event, which we're going to hear about in a moment. She says, love them muchly, wonderful women with who keep me sane. So thank you for that, Lisa. So big shout out to Lisa, Sally and Liz. Let's hear this and then let's hear from Lisa.
Listen.
that was a track picked specially by Lisa, not me. So Chumbawamba, Tub Thumping. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the Business Bunker Show, Lisa Settle of Telcare Limited, the telecoms company from over there on the Midway City Estate. Yeah, absolutely. we specifically asked Lisa to come on this show because she's been up to something. She has been up to something big time, and we thought she ought to come in and explain it to us. So, Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll explain why Tub Thumping in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So, you have been on an epic journey.
Yes.
You've been on a few epic journeys over the last few years, you know, climbing mountains and all kinds of things, haven't
you? Yes, there was that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. This was further afield.
See, some of us with midlife crises, we just buy sports cars, yeah? You go and do mad things, yeah?
Yeah, it was mad.
Cars, yeah. Two sports cars. Thank you, Bill. Yeah. So, Lisa, you recently embarked on an epic journey to raise money for a number of charities.
Yeah, three charities.
Yeah. So, I'll tell you what, it's easier if I let you explain what you did, why you did it, how you did it, and then you can talk about how your bottom recovered.
Okay. All right. So, well, I think a lot of people already know the reasons why we did it, but just for those that didn't, my friend Sally decided that 2016 was the year that we were no longer going to be on the school run.
Right.
And she decided that we ought to do something.
Is that because you were just going to make the kids walk to school?
No, they'd all finished. So we thought, okay, let's do something. Let's go on an adventure. And I secretly thought that Sally had something planned, like volunteering in a Indian school or something. And I thought, yeah, I could do that. It's fine.
Or going to a spa or something.
Well, I thought it was a bit more than a spa. But anyway, she came up with this adventure and she said, we're going to be cycling. So that I was horrified at that point because I hadn't ridden a bike since 1973.
Right,
you know,
okay.
The old chopper.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah. And that's only when she got to the word cycling. She hadn't finished the sentence.
She hadn't finished. I mean, I hadn't even, you know, my next thought was after I'd got over the cycling, my next thought was, how far? And she said, 450 kilometres. And I was like, oh, my God, I was gobsmacked. And then I thought, actually, Lisa, you don't know how far 450 kilometres is. So what's that in miles? And she said, about 280 miles. What? And, of course, didn't even ask where. And then she just, you know, just snuck in with the, oh, and it's Vietnam to Cambodia. So, yeah, completely gobsmacked, but had to go with it and went with the flow.
Well, it could have been worse. It could have been like Manchester to London or something. I'm sure that wouldn't have been
quite
so exciting. It could have been worse, couldn't it?
Do you know what, Joe? It might have been cooler.
It could have been worse. You could have been cycling in Manchester. Sorry, Manchester.
It's a lovely place.
That's true, yeah. It was a bit hot. Yes,
it was a bit hot, yes.
So, Lisa, this first of all, I kind of deconstruct this and work it backwards, really.
Yeah,
but
okay.
I was interested when I first saw this. The ride from Vietnam to Cambodia, is that a well worked trail? Is it a known kind of thing?
It is. Yeah, there are quite a few charities that are organised. In fact, I know someone who did it quite a few years ago.
Mm.
So it has been running for some time.
Okay, but what I'm trying to get at though is that you kind of know where you're going. It's not.
Yes, yeah.
It's one of those wiggling along on a really like thin mountain track where you could like fall off. Wasn't that bad, was it?
No, it wasn't that bad. Although there were some scary moments, but it wasn't that bad.
It's
an organised event organised by Action for Charity.
Right.
And they organise women's events.
Right.
Similar, lots of bike rides. They've done cycling to India. They've done Tanzania. Quite a few.
Okay.
So outlandish.
Talk
rides.
Us through the logistics of this. So you set up your Just Giving page and you started to raise oodles of money.
Yeah, and then had sleepless nights because, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning you think, oh my God, I've got to raise £3,000 to be accepted on the ride.
Okay. Is that before you start?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you had a deadline.
That's
I think it was the first
privilege
August.
Of it, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the privilege of getting a sore bum.
Yeah. Do you want to kill yourself in some foreign monsoon-infested place?
Yeah, that's
that'll
it.
Be £3,000, please.
That's it. Yeah. So that was rather daunting. And then, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, you're lying there thinking, you've just signed up to cycle from Vietnam to Cambodia. That's huge. That's massive.
Yeah.
And you can't do it. Yeah. So, you know, and then
and
in
Dave
the morning,
keep laughing at you.
I, do you know, David Settle did not sponsor me until I got back.
Really?
So he probably thought, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So, and I, when I got home, I said, husband, do you think you could sponsor me now? He said, oh, yeah, okay. Now he's worried. He said, what's next?
What's next? Right,
yeah. Absolutely.
Gap year. So
I want to kind of work out the logistics of this as mm-hmm. well, Lisa. So you got to your $3,000, or you had it.
We did. I mean, that I thought actually that's going to be really hard to do. But my first breakthrough was at the Kent Women in Business Awards. I'm one right. of the judges
yeah.
there, and
oh, you took bribes.
I did indeed. No.
Sorry about that.
No, Hillary mentioned it at the Women in Business Awards just before we kicked off. And said, if anyone wants to donate to Lisa, this is what she's doing, and put envelopes on the table. Mm. And at the end of the night, the envelopes were all brought together, and they gave them to me. And it was all busy, and Dave and I were staying there, so we took them up to the room and left it in the room. So sort of 1:30 in the morning, I decided to open up these envelopes to have a look. And I was completely gobsmacked. It was £555
wow.
in the envelope. So,
brilliant.
Yeah, it was amazing. So that was a really good start.
Yeah.
And then we went on. We did a networking breakfast. I did a cake auction, which right. was really well attended, and lots of people donated. I actually had 39 cakes turn up at my house.
Wow.
I had a marquee in the back garden, and we had it all out in the summer. And 39 cakes arrived that, you know, and really nice cakes as well.
Funny.
Really, really nice cakes. Sally for Cakes did a lovely cake with a bike on the top.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, Sally's
fabulous.
A good girl. Yeah.
And then we did a quiz night. And so eventually, the money was coming together. And
at the same time, were you actually practicing your bike riding?
Yes, yeah, we did do that. We
on
had various on my chopper. No, I actually brought the bike. I started off at the cycle park.
Can you stop saying that?
What?
On your chopper.
On your chopper.
I'm having to bite my tongue every time.
Right, no more mention of the chopper. Went to the cycle park and learnt to ride, basically, but was very scared to go. Leave the cycle park and go on the road. Yeah. I was frightened of cycling with the traffic, etc., etc. But eventually, I managed to do that, and we went off and did sort of cycles around the country, and really started to enjoy it then as well.
Cool.
So we had we volunteered ourselves for sort of various charity rides, and always had a goal. So it wasn't the massive thing all of a sudden. We broke it down into bite-sized bits,
right.
so that we could, you know, we okay. could focus on that.
Okay, so the fateful day came, and you set off.
And
I have to know, because I saw it on Facebook, and you tweeted me and stuff. You landed at Hong Kong.
We went to Hong Kong just, first of all, just the three of us.
Bit of shopping.
Well, actually, not very much shopping. But we went there to get adjusted to the time difference.
Right.
We're all really, really busy women, and the three of us thought, you know what? If we just land and get on a bike, that's not very good preparation. So we decided to go to Hong Kong for 4 nights
and
chill. And we thought we might get some nice time by the pool, but it wasn't very warm at all.
Right, yeah.
So we went sightseeing. We did Kowloon. We did Hong Kong Island. We went to the races. We went to the Hong Kong Jockey cool. Club, which was really good. And we met some fabulous people who actually donated when they found out what we were doing. They donated.
Brilliant.
And there was a lovely Australian couple who gave us $800.
Wow.
And turned around and said, I said, oh, that's fantastic. Can you give me your email address? I'd really like to let you know how we do. And they said, no, it's fine. But, you know, you've got this. You go and do it. Our daughter died of cervical cancer.
Wow.
And it was a really heartwarming moment and very sad. So we said, okay, what was your daughter's name? So we sort of thought of her as we were cycling on the tough days.
Right.
We were doing it for her.
So you arrived in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably you didn't pack your bike in your overnight luggage.
No, I just took my saddle.
You took your saddle?
Took my saddle.
You got your own personalised saddle?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, took it off my bike and took it along.
Really?
Yeah.
So they provide the bike?
Yes.
And you provide the saddle?
Yeah. We had bikes in Vietnam and then we had new bikes in Cambodia.
Oh, really? And was that part of the organised thing?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But they can't afford saddles, is that how it works?
No, they. In actual fact, their saddle was very much like mine. And
right.
I probably could have used it. But, you know, having cycled for 2 years on mine, I thought, do you know what? I'm not going to risk anything.
Yeah.
Take that with
you
me.
You can tell Paul doesn't do much cycling,
yeah.
can't you?
Yeah, I got that.
I didn't know that saddles came away. I really didn't. When I had a chopper, you couldn't take the saddle off it.
No, that's true. You couldn't on my tomahawk either. Or on my sister's budgie.
That
was the whole range.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You couldn't take that saddle.
Mine was blue.
Was it?
I had a purple tomahawk, that was the smaller one, and my sister had an orange budgie, which was the even smaller one.
Oh, yeah, I remember the budgies.
There's a lot of corpsing going on around here.
I promise to behave, and I'm going to.
But we stopped that. We stopped that straight away.
I'm too frightened to comment.
Yeah, exactly. So, you've got, what, 250 miles to cycle?
Mm-hmm. 180.
Sorry, 280. I didn't want to shortchange
you there. Every mile counts.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what the season was. It's not monsoon season or anything like that.
Well, this was the thing. In all the gubbins that were Action for Charity centres, they said be prepared for about 25 to 30 degrees.
Right.
And I set my phone to the weather in Ho Chi Minh City and Siem Reap, and they were right. It was about that this time last year. So we were going with that. Of course, when we got there, it was 38 degrees.
Wow.
Jeez. And it was...
Was it humid as well?
It didn't... In Vietnam, it didn't seem so humid. It was actually burning hot. But it did seem humid when we got to Cambodia. And I don't know if that was our bodies adjusting and just the way it felt. Mm-hmm. But the very first day was... the first hour, actually, I cycled. And I felt the heat coming through my helmet. I felt dizzy. I felt sick.
That's just the first hour.
And I was cycling over a flyover, and there was traffic all around me, and I just thought, I feel as if I'm going to faint, but I can't because I might get run over, and I'm just going to have to keep going. And oh my God, what on earth have you done?
It's really interesting you say that, because I think when you hear that the people go and do these amazing feats, you sort of imagine that they get there and they just do it because they're so far down the line that there is no choice and off they go, and you sort of expect they're going to do it.
Yeah.
But to hear in the very first hour it was that hard just shows you how difficult it is to push through.
Absolutely.
And make it happen.
Well, yeah. I've got a number of questions I want to ask here of a logistical nature, as it were.
Now, you're don't determined, aren't you? You want to get the logistics.
Come on.
No, because first of all, I wanted to know what kind of road you're riding on. You know, I'm imagining a dirt track through the jungle. It could, for all I know, be an A road.
Some of his films he's been watching.
Yeah.
We were cycling through towns. Mm. We were cycling on the dirt track. Mm. There was a lot of roadworks going on, so there were some really gravelly moments, which were... I mean, there were loads of potholes, and the standard was that you cycle along, and when you saw a pothole, there was bound to be someone behind you, so you were you shout out, pothole, you know, overtaking, tuk-tuk, you know, all these sort of signs that we had to do.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons I ask. I mean, I've never been to Vietnam, but I was in Sri Lanka a few years ago, and it was just mad. Yeah. You know, you get a road that is no more than a dirt track, and there's six lanes of traffic,
It's coming in all directions.
And they just weave in and out, and then the elephants wander across the road and all kinds of stuff. It's just mad.
Yeah.
Was it similar to that in
some
places?
It was absolutely like that. I mean, Ho Chi Minh City is mad. We didn't cycle through Ho Chi Minh City, but some of the towns that we cycled through, and I did actually get knocked off, which is hence that song. I got knocked off and got back up again.
So thank you for that. That is why we played Chumbawamba.
Yes, absolutely.
I get knocked down, so I get back up again. And you were knocked down by what?
I was knocked down by one of our ladies. She lost her nerve. We were told... I mean, the good thing about it, yes, the traffic is completely mad, but there is no aggression whatsoever. It's completely passive. That's just the way they are. Mm-hmm. They cycle all over the place. They know where they were going. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they'll avoid whatever comes in their way. Mm-hmm. So we were told, just keep cycling. Go where you've got to go. Mm-hmm. And they will avoid you. And funnily enough, I mean, I don't know why, but I was quite okay with that. And so I was happily cycling along, but a lady came towards us on a moped with her entire family on the moped, as they do.
12 kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And the lady in front of me, who was part of our team, lost her nerve and swerved. And as she swerved, her back wheel took out my front wheel. Mm. So my bike went down.
Pile up.
And not me, and it landed on my ankle, the pedal landed on my ankle. Wow. And so...
How far into it were you at that stage?
That was the first day, Joe.
Oh no, you had a terrible first day. So, and how many days did you do in total?
Six actual days cycling.
Oh my goodness, That's a big chunk of it already.
So it actually, I've just showed Bird the photo. It was a bit nasty. It was bruised and swollen ended up on antibiotics because it got infected. So
hence why we were talking before we came on, and you started when Paul was asking again about logistics. I don't know what it is with him and logistics. And you said,
I'm just fascinated by how it works. I've got another logistical question.
And your first response was, well, in the front we had a bus which had the medics in it.
Yes.
And I just, at the time, it just struck me as not an odd thing to say, but it brought me up that, you know, that was the first thing you said, and then you went on and said that your cases were in the back.
You
and
really
blah, blah,
needed
blah, blah.
The medics.
Now you've said that, it absolutely makes sense why you said that.
And certainly, on the first 2 days, you know, you can imagine the amount of people that were suffering with the heat.
Mm.
Really,
well, I wanted to ask you about that. That was my next logistical question.
Go for it.
You've painted a picture of what it's like. You know, there's lots of traffic about. It's a hot day. The sun is beating down on your helmet. And that
sometimes
kind of
there was no shade. You were right in
absolutely.
The middle of it. And
now,
that was hard.
Now, normally when you do exercise, they tell you to take on board lots of water.
Yep.
Yeah? How do you do that in a country like Vietnam? Because you don't want to drink the water either, do you, really?
Well, it was very well organised. I had one of these water bottles on my bike with a lid, obviously, to protect from the dirt. Mm. And I had a Camelback on my back. So
did you have a Camelback?
Yeah. Mm. Camelback was plain water, which I was sipping as I went along. And this, my water bottle, had the electrolytes in there.
Mm-hmm.
And Dyrolite. I was using Dyrolite as well. And then we had water stops about every 10K. So we would have a water stop, then we would have a snack stop, we'd have a water stop, it would be lunch, then we, you know, and so on. So, and they had bottled water, and they came, and this was the best part, they came with a great big slab of ice.
All right.
So we were all snapping bits of ice off and putting it in our helmet and putting it in our, we had little scarves on, and we were wrapping ice in the scarves so it just dripped down as we went along, which didn't last too long, but it was heaven when we did it.
Fantastic. Lisa, we're kind of fast running out of time.
Okay,
and there's
sure.
lots of stories to tell us
here,
and there's
absolutely.
A couple of other things I want to hear from you. So you did this epic journey. Did it chafe?
It did.
Oh, Paul.
It did.
What?
Okay.
I mean,
listen, I knew about the bottom thing was going to happen. So, okay. So,
for
those of you, let's get down to the
him.
Nitty-gritty. There's the front bottom and then there's the back bottom.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
is that right?
Okay.
On the second day.
Now we're there. Now that's where we're waiting, basically.
On the second day, my front bottom was really hurting. Mm. And
right.
I thought, oh my God, this is only day 2.
Wow.
What on earth am I going to do? How am I going to get through 6 days of riding? Fortunately, that night, I heard a lady saying, do you know what? I had my saddle move forward and it's made the world of difference. And I thought, good point. I'll do that in the morning. So I got a mechanic. So can you just put my, an inch forward? And he managed to get it forward and it did. It made the world of difference.
Mm.
So that was good.
Top tip.
And then it was top tip.
Top tip.
And then day 5, I think it was, I was really suffering with my coccyx, and that was just because of the sheer, you know, distance we were going I was fidgeting in my seat.
Yeah.
But, you know, we got there and it was done. And
how many days did it take to walk properly again afterwards?
Do you know what? No, it was fine.
Yeah,
honestly, fine.
Yeah.
You know, you had done this right, though, hadn't you? You'd spent a lot of time bicycle riding around
we
the
had
UK.
Trained.
Training and getting up to speed and all the rest of it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And they make sure that you train. They put on, the charity put on a proper training weekend in the Cotswolds where you cycle sort of 85 miles
And did they have like random motorcyclists coming towards you and things
no, they didn't throw those at us.
Suddenly jump out at you with an elephant.
Yeah.
Lisa, we can talk about this forever. Sadly, we've run out of time.
Can I say a little bit before we run
out? Cool, go for it.
There's huge thanks to so many people that supported me, and it wasn't just the donations, it wasn't just about the Just Giving page. There were a lot of people that supported us on our NAM to CAM page, lots of people who just sent little messages. One night I woke up at some unearthly hour and someone was actually online and chatting to me, and that made a huge difference because I was so scared about the next day because it was my longest day.
Right.
And it was really nice to speak to someone at home.
Mm-hmm.
My mother accidentally FaceTimed me at 4:20 one morning. Fortunately, it was the one morning that I wasn't sharing with someone. But, you know, so that was really nice as well. But it was, you know, all the support from the ladies from Women in Business, the Rotary Club, St Mary's Fellowship, the Cycle Park, the Business Bunker, so many people. So I just want to say huge, huge thank you. We're putting together a slideshow. We've been asked to do a ladies' lunch, speak at some fellowships and things like that. So if anyone wants to know about that and see some pictures, we've got some gory pictures of deep-fried tarantulas. We can tell you the story about the cockroaches in the room, and the shower that didn't work, and the, well, you don't want to know about the toilet story, really, but, you know, lots of things. But also grateful to find out about the charities. I want to mention the charities who are Breast Cancer Care, Joe Cervical Cancer Trust and Ovarian Cancer Action. It was a pleasure to get to know them. Some of the girls actually came on the ride, and I cycled with them, and I think statistics prove that we will actually need them one day. So it was a pleasure to get to know them, and I feel very comfortable in being able to contact them when we need them.
And how much did you raise?
We raised, between Sally, Liz and I, we raised £12,500.
Wow.
As fantastic. A group, for Group 2, we raised 30.
Absolutely fantastic.
We raised, oh gosh, how much did we raise? £133,000,
wow.
I think.
That's the whole amazing. 100 girls that were...
Yeah.
Girls. Ladies.
No, absolutely. 300, sorry, I've got that wrong, £355,000.
Wow.
For the whole trip.
Yeah. Wow. Just shows how important they
and
are.
And it's still coming in as well.
Yeah. And a lot of people do them for sort of, you know, personal whatever, but actually when you look at the sort of money that they're able to raise.
Yeah.
And can people still donate?
People can still donate, yeah.
Are you able to tell us how they can do that?
They can go to my Just Giving page, which is www.justgiving.com/Lisa-Marie-Settle1.
Fantastic. So please still donate.
Thank you very much.
That's an epic thing you've done. And
thank
we are,
you.
Despite gently taking the mickey out of your back bottom, we are in awe of what you've done again, Lisa. And this isn't the first time either, I have to say.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
And we also wait with bated breath to find out what you're going to do next. But I suspect David is waiting for the same thing as well to find out what you're going
to
do next.
There is something in the back of my mind.
I'm sure there is. But many congratulations.
Thanks very much, and thanks for your support, Paul.
No, as always. And we really, really do think that you're an epic star for doing that.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you.
Lisa Settle of Telcare. We never mentioned the company, did we, really?
Telcare, no. Yeah. Hopefully they're listening. They're all getting ready for the Christmas party on Saturday.
Christmas
we did mention
time.
You while you were there.
Yeah.
I was on that show that week you were there, and we were
excellent.
Giving you mentions.
Good, good. Thank you very much, Joe.
Cool. Thank you for that.
Oh, there you go. Well, a fantastic interview that was. It's one of my favourites, hence why I'm playing it. But as you may have noticed, the theme of all three of my favourite interviews are about both coming back and overcoming adversity and going the extra mile. And I think that these are lessons that we all need to learn as we enter 2021. But what a fantastic interview with Lisa. It's one of my favourites. And I was going to play a different interview because I couldn't find it, and Lisa asked if I was going to play the Vietnam interview, so I kind of doubled my efforts over the weekend and I managed to find the interview, and I'm so pleased I did because it was a fantastic interview. And the money that they raised, over 350,000 quid, was unbelievable. But what a fantastic thing to do. And I must get Lisa back on, actually, to tell us some of the other stories that she didn't get round to telling us the last time about the plumbing and all kinds of stuff. But Lisa, thank you so much for that. It was a fantastic thing that you did. And we are in awe of the things that you do, so congratulations. We're almost at time for the news. I've got one more tweet that I need to read just before we go to the newsroom. It's from the lovely folks at Chips and Dinks, and they're just wishing everybody a happy new year for 2021. So thank you, Bev, thank you, Tony, and we echo those sentiments too. A happy new year for everyone. We've got another hour of the show to go, but for the moment let's join the Channel Radio newsroom.
This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
You're listening to Channel Radio.